Welcome, everyone, to episode 332 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today it feels weird to talk about the NBA given all that's going on in the country right now, but we do have NBA news to discuss. The NBA Board of Governors approved a plan yesterday. The NBA is coming back this year, so we're going to talk about the restart plan, the details that are coming out. Still, nothing is completely finalized. The Players Association is voting today, but it seems like it's a formality. Before we get into that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. And we are now being hosted by Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today, as always, is my Danish superstar radio co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
Well, Brian, it could be better, all things considered. Obviously, having the NBA back pretty soon is major news for us. It's something that I'm looking forward to. But like you said at the top of it, considering everything that's happening right now, it's just such a somber note to receive those news on.
Yeah, and we are going to get into that as well. Because we're an NBA podcast, we are going to start with the NBA news, but we are going to address everything that's going on. And joining us to discuss all of that is Anthony Sain. He is a Memphis Grizzlies writer for Sports Illustrated at allgrizzlies.com. Anthony, how's it going, my man?
I'm good, guys. How are you guys doing today?
You're hanging in there. Before we get underway here, can you let our listeners know where they can find you on Twitter and any work you'd like to promote?
Yeah, you can find me at Sain Asylum. S-A-I-N-A-S-Y-L-U-M at Saint Asylum, also at All Grizzlies on Twitter. You can find me on allgrizzlies.com. I'm putting out daily content for the NBA, specifically the Grizzlies. Those are the projects I'm working on right now.
Very good. Yeah, give Anthony a follow because, of course, the Grizzlies are one of the 22 teams being invited to Orlando for the restart. And Anthony, we wanted to bring a Grizzlies person on in particular for this podcast because, the Grizzlies are one of the teams that when the season went on hiatus in mid-March, they were the number 8 seed. They have a 3.5 game lead over any other team in the West. But given the details that came out, we're going to have a 22 teams coming to Orlando. There's 8 regular season games for each team, which they're calling quote unquote seeding games. And then at the end of those 8 games, if any team is within 4 games of the number 8 seed in the West, we're going to have a play-in tournament where the number 9 seed would have to win 2 games to get in. The number 8 seed needs to win only 1 game. So the East, it doesn't seem likely that we're going to have a play-in. The Magic are 5.5 games ahead of the Washington Wizards, and the Nets are a half game above the Magic. So the Wizards would have to go on a ridiculous run, or the Nets or Magic would just have to fall apart. But the Grizzlies, 3.5 up, but a number of teams are, I think it's the Blazers, the Pelicans, the Kings are all 3.5 back, the Spurs are 4 back, and then the Suns are floating in there at 6 back. But, if the Grizzlies don't go 6-2, 7-1, the likelihood is there will probably be a play-in tournament. What do you think of this whole format?
It's actually grown on me. When they first started bringing it out, being someone that's a Memphis Grizzlies fan first and also someone who's covered the team for years, and then just, spending time with the guys, basically a daily basis covering the team, it frustrates you at first because Memphis always has a chip on their shoulder. The city of Memphis always has a chip on our shoulder, like someone's out to get us. And I'm usually the person who says, well, that type of stuff, we're on our way, and don't worry about that. Those type of bias don't exist, whatever. But on this one, it's hard to ignore that it seems obvious that the NBA is pushing for the Zion Williamsons of the world, the Damian Lillards of the world, to get into the playoffs. And if you look back at an NBA, the shortened season from the strike a few years back when they had a shortened season, well, I'm saying a few years, more like 10 years back, when they had the shortened season, they played less games that season than they've already played this year. And for some reason, they felt the need to have to play more games to basically justify those final seeds when there are races that are above the 8 seed that are tighter than the Grizzlies race, but they found a reason to want to basically try to find a way to get the Grizzlies out of the playoffs. It's grown on me, though, because it still allows the Grizzlies, they still have the advantage with the 8 games left. They would basically have to totally fall out to not be in the position to play in the play-in game. And in the play-in game setup, it gives you 3 chances to beat a team twice. And you don't have – you beat them once. I'm sorry. You beat them once and it's over. I don't know what I was saying earlier. But it's growing on me. Like, I think that the 8 games could be to the Grizzlies' advantage because we have guys that are coming back from injury. Justice Winslow, Jaren Jackson Jr. Justice hasn't played a game for us at all this season, as well as Brandon Clark. He's coming back. And it gives you those games as a tune-up to get ready for the playoffs. Because I'm sure Justice Winslow is a great defender. He's one of the best defenders in the league. But his first game back matching up against LeBron James might not be the best warm-up for a guy who's been out for a long time. But I'm excited about it. I'm confident in the Grizzlies. We had a conversation with Coach Taylor Jenkins early during the pandemic. He's confident in his team. He thinks his team can make some noise. Had a conversation with president of the team, Jason Wexler. And I talked about that Memphis edge that we have, and he even said, hey, that Memphis edge is part of what makes us want to knock down whatever's in front of us. So they're not worried about anything that's put up in front of them. I'm excited about it. I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be 8 very exciting games because these are the best teams in the league that are left, you know, after the smoke is clear of the pandemic. And I think that it's going to be some exciting matchups in these 8 games, regardless of how they do it with the Grizzlies in. They had goals to have a team that's competitive at the beginning of the season. Even though this is the first year of a major rebuild, very major rebuild, they wanted to be competitive this year. They wanted to play an important game. And they've got 8 very important ones coming up soon with a possible plan. So their goals are being reached this year, and I'm excited about it.
Yeah, I mean, by all accounts, the Grizzlies are ahead of schedule. Like, going into the season, I believe they had one of the worst over-unders in terms of Vegas odds makers. So, you know, for the fact that Ja Morant hit the ground running, is the clear rookie of the year front runner, Jaren Jackson Jr. is taking a step forward in year 2 as well. Right. I'm glad you brought up Justice Winslow. Have you heard? Is he definitely going to be playing when they resume?
I heard that it looks good. Everyone I've talked to said that he seems to be in good shape. He's focused. He's locked in. He put out a tweet that said Memphis versus everybody, the height of all the talks about people basically trying to crown Portland or crown New Orleans, the team that's going to pass us and eliminate us from the playoffs or whatever. So he's taking that personal. He's a guy that's really jumped in and been in great shape in the city so far.
That's awesome. Yeah, I agree. The fact that I was wondering, you know, with all the play-in ideas being batted around, how they were going to advantage the team that sat at number 8. Regardless of whether it's Memphis or whoever, you know, if the Pelicans or Blazers went 8-0 and jumped them, whatever. So I do like the idea that, you know, the 8 only has to win one game, the 9 has to win both. It does seem fair to give the 8 some kind of advantage. Mort, what do you think about this format?
No, I think it's interesting. Look, I've been very vocal about, you know, given that the season has been weird from start to finish, more or less, that I just wanted to get even more weird. I wanted to see all kinds of, you know, new thinking going into the season when it returns, and having a play-in tournament potentially is pretty huge to me. I think this is going to be something that we can look at, we can evaluate, and we can go, okay, what do we like about this? What don't we like about this moving forward? So ultimately the league can figure out, is there something to this? Is there something we can modify, tinkle with a little bit? And maybe we end up with a brand new product when everything is said and done, which could be immensely fun.
Yeah, I mean, do you think that this could be a template that they continue to use moving forward? Maybe this is the way to combat end of season tanking for those teams in the late lottery?
Potentially. We'll see. I mean, right now we haven't seen it in action yet, so we don't really know what the fan reaction is. And I have to assume that the fan reaction is going to be, you know, the biggest trump card there is. Like, whatever they say is, you know, how they move forward. But from what you just said, absolutely. I mean, theoretically, if this could mean the end of, you know, late lottery tanking, That would be a major asset for everyone involved. Yes.
Yeah. Anthony, do you know if the Grizzlies have any one team that's not currently in the playoff race that they are more worried about than others, or just you, you know, as a writer, fan, analyst, is there any team that gives you more pause than, you know, like the Suns are far enough back that I think it's probably fair to say they won't be in there. It seems like it's probably going to be either the Pelicans or the Blazers. Does one of those teams worry you more than the other?
As a fan of basketball, as a fan of the team, I'm more worried about the Pelicans. I'm really not worried about any of them, because if you really step back and look at it, you're talking about teams that are 8 or 9 games below 500. They've been their way the whole season. I'm not really worried about any of them turning into this mega unstoppable team. I think that the Pelicans have been underachievers all year. Even before they had Zion, that team on paper really should be way better than what they are. A lot of people had predicted them to be a playoff team this year. For different reasons, they've underachieved or whatever, but they've kind of turned it up. They turned it up. If you actually look at the numbers, they were turning it up well before Zion came, and they've kind of been average right in the middle since he's been there. They were playing better, actually, in my eyes, before he got there. But, of course, the media will tell you something otherwise. But I think they're probably the biggest threat. I've got the Kings, actually, is the second biggest threat. They've been playing some really good basketball, and that team is they're really gelling right now. They're gelling at the right time. And that team is giving us fits as far as one-on-one matchups. That team, that rivalry that's building between De'Aaron Fox and John Morant and those two teams, with a lot of parallels on those two teams. And also, but I've got the Blazers in third. I don't buy them at all. They have horrible chemistry. If you look at that team, just a few weeks ago, you had C.J. McCollum basically saying he doesn't think players should come back at all. And you got Damian Lillard saying if they're in a situation where they can't make the playoffs, he's going to sit on the bench while his team plays. Team has some weird stuff going on. We played them in a game not too long ago, beat the brakes off of them in FedEx Forum, and they were just looking like they were about to unravel as a team. And I'm just not impressed by Portland. There's something else going on with that team, maybe behind the scenes, but they're not. I'm just not impressed by them. I think if these teams were so good, their record would be much better than 8 and 9 games below 500, where they pretty much dwelled for the majority of the season.
Yeah, that is a fair point. I'm surprised to hear about Portland, though. It's interesting insight that you have in terms of actually like seeing the chemistry. Just because, you know, they have, by all accounts, like Yusuf Nurkic was basically about to come back when the season went on hiatus. And now it sounds like Zach Collins will also be back. So just in terms of health, this is like the most complete the Blazers are going to be all year. It's not just going to be Dame and CJ and Carmelo and Hassan Whiteside. You know, you're adding Nurkic and Collins to the mix. Those are two big pieces. Rodney Hood is still obviously going to be out, but aside from that, you know, that combination in the front court seems like it could be good. But I guess the counterpoint is, well, you know, Collins has played like 3 or 4 games this year. Nurkic hasn't played since March. They could be very rusty when they do debut.
It's not a video game. You just can't cut them on and send them out there. You know, it's going to take a while for them. The conditioning is a big thing. Nurkic's a pretty hefty guy. So, you know, it's not a guarantee he's going to be able to get out there and get up and down the court like everyone else has already been doing.
Yeah, that's a totally fair point. Mort, which teams do you think benefit from this format other than, you know, the obvious like Pelicans, Blazers, just because they can get into the tournament? But do you think, you know, other teams are either advantaged or disadvantaged by this?
Well, no, I mean, I would say that it could be interesting to see where Washington ends up. They played a lot better as of late. You know, when the season started, you and I talked about how they were going to, I believe you had them as worse than the league, if I'm not mistaken, or close to it.
Sounds right. Yeah.
Right. And you know, they're still very, very bad. I mean, they've won 24 games and lost 40, but their brand of basketball being this very, very heavy offensive team, you know, if they break through and if Orlando completely crumbles, you know, there's a chance right there. There's a chance they could go in. Whereas if we've kept the status quo and just said, you know, the top 16 teams goes immediately into the playoffs, that wouldn't have been there. And I think the Wizards could be a fun addition to the playoffs if this is happening. But in terms of advantage, disadvantage, I mean, we got to play the games first. Like Anthony said, you know, this is not 2K. We need to see how this product ends when it comes on the court, because they've been gone for what is it, like three and a half months when everything is said and done? That's a long while. It almost feels like it's a second season that's starting up. You know, you have plenty of players who are coming back from injuries. Like, this is not the same teams necessarily that we saw in March. They basically had an off season in some capacity. So it's going to be interesting to see. But Washington is one of those teams I could see really benefiting from this.
Yeah, I wrote a thing for the Step Back the other day, just ranking the non-playoff teams in terms of like who's most likely to make the playoffs. And Washington was not last on my list just because, you know, they're the only team in the East coming back that isn't a playoff team. So that helps. I think I had I definitely had the Suns behind them because the Suns just have to jump over so many teams.
Right.
I think I put the Kings behind them too. Like it was torn between the Kings and the Spurs, but this just feels like such a, like the Spurs have no business making the playoffs this year,
right.
But I will not rule out the pop factor, especially given these weird circumstances. Like, I think coaching is going to come into play more than usual at the end of the regular season, just because like everyone is dealing with such a unique circumstance. And I could see Pop getting his guys locked in, like, okay, we have 8 games left. We need to do X to get into this playoff play-in tournament. And then, you know, at that point, it's a 2-game and then we're in the playoffs. And they make the playoffs for the 23rd straight year. One team aside from the Sixers, who I think it hurts them more than it helps, but one team that I'm really intrigued by is the Houston Rockets. Just because we've heard, I think Kelly Iko of The Athletic had that great piece the other week or recently about James Harden's training regimen during the pandemic. And it sounds like he's lost a ton of weight and he's just like feeling recharged. That team was wearing down at the end of the regular season. And that's been a theme with James Harden for a while now. You know, he gets to the playoffs and he's just like so out of gas because he's been playing 37 minutes a night for the whole season and carrying such a heavy load. If they are recharged and, you know, given the wear and tear they get from this small ball, they could be more dangerous than we think. What do you think about the Rockets and their chances of making some noise?
No, I think you're right on. And because, like, look, Harden, like we've talked about him on this podcast plenty over the years in terms of him having to carry such a big load offensively during the regular season. So when the playoffs roll around, he's more or less, you know, fatigued out. Having Russell Westbrook was one thing this year, but you were still leaning on Harden, you know, predominantly. So now having all these months off, and while you still have Westbrook on the roster, I have to assume that a playoff run here is basically what the Houston Rockets were hoping for in terms of the circumstances, because now they have a fresh Harden. Now they have Russell Westbrook as the clear number two. They have this, you know, spaced out offense that is really, you know, a destructive force, especially in the playoff setting, although they're taking it to new heights. So we don't really know how that's going to look, but all the cards are out there for them and they're going all in. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how far they're going. I mean, I have a feeling this is kind of like their last year of being a completely, you know, in a dominating fashion, you know, a championship contender. I think this is the year where they have to go for it big.
Right. Well, because Tillman Fertitta is going to have to salary dump James Harden after this year.
Well, maybe not Harden, but he's definitely going to have some tough decisions to make. Yes.
Yeah, for sure. Anthony, let's say the Grizzlies do hold off all of these teams, the Blazers, Pelicans, so on and so forth. How do you think they would match up with the Lakers in that first round series?
I think it'll be fun. I think it'll be a good matchup. We recently played the Lakers not too long ago and beat them pretty handily. They beat us pretty bad the game before that. I know the regular season doesn't matter, but the Grizzlies are just a weird, young, athletic, energetic team that can sneak up on you. They're full of confidence. I think that comes from strictly from John Morant, a guy who just, you know, his personality is just contagious. And like I talked to someone else about this, the Grizzlies, they're so young that they don't realize they're not supposed to be as good as what they are already. And you really can't tell them any different. If you remember, this is the same team that had the comments that came out from Dylan Brooks about Andre Iguodala. And, you know, they really don't care. I mean, they don't care about, they understand the teams may be better than them, but they don't think the teams are better than them. So I don't, like I said, I don't think they'll beat the Lakers, but I think it could be a great series with a lot of excitement in it, with a young team who, with Ja Morant, Jaren Jackson, other young guys, that could definitely make some noise.
Yeah, if nothing else, I mean, Zion is already a household name just because all the hype he had coming into the league. Like, I almost want the Grizzlies to make the playoffs and get that Lakers first round matchup because, you know, LeBron and Anthony Davis is clearly going to be like one of the primetime national games, not going to get buried on NBA TV. And I want casual NBA fans to have that come to Jesus moment and realize, like, oh man, John Morant's really good. Like, he's going to be one of the next stars in the league. Jaren Jackson Jr. is really good as well. Like, the Grizzlies have one of the best young, fun cores in the league, and this team will be one to be reckoned with. It's just like, you know, they don't get, unless you're someone like us who's paying attention to the NBA every night, you're not going to necessarily like know how good they can be already.
I totally agree.
I will say this. I wrote a piece about the Sixers at Forbes yesterday on this format, and I think it helps them more than hurts them more than helps, just because, A, they're the worst road team of any playoff team right now, and I don't know whether this counts as a home or road environment because there's no fans either way, but I'm leading more road versus home, so that's not great. They only have 8 regular season games, and they're starting 5 if Shake Milton is going to replace Al Horford, has not played a single minute together. That's not great. They could lose the Oklahoma City pick. It is top 20 protected, and these seeding games do count for playoff teams. So all of that has me nervous. I know you DM'd me yesterday when you saw this format come out because of the draft lottery rules, and the TLDR version is basically the 16 teams that make the playoffs, these games count toward where they end up in the draft. The 14 teams that end up in the lottery, the standings end up being frozen as of March 11th, which is when the season went on hiatus. So basically, it's because like a team like the Wizards otherwise could have just intentionally tanked, gone 0-8, and they would have dropped from 9th to 7th. What did you think of how the NBA did this draft format? And again, is this something that we could emulate moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, I guess they could. Here's the thing, though. It does hurt some of the teams, you know, that aren't going to be in part of this whole thing. You know, I'm looking at the Bulls in particular because they had a rough schedule if they had kept, you know, playing all the 82 games. So they would presumably have even gone down even more and then thus gotten better lottery odds. So you have certain teams out there who are probably, I have to actually imagine that's why the Bulls were one of those teams basically clamoring to get into this tournament or just keep playing, because they wanted to have a 30 team league playing so they could get as much down in the standings as possible. this year in particular, I don't think we're going to learn just a hell of a lot about it, honestly, in moving forward with the draft. I think this is something that we have to play by ear. But no, it's an interesting factor that they kind of freeze it and then go, okay, so the Wizards, if they don't make the playoffs, then they've frozen in this particular spot as well. It's an interesting angle to it.
Yeah, like I don't know how logistically how you can do it because of strength of schedule. Like, if you get to March 15th and one team has a much more difficult schedule than the other for the last month, how is it fair that they can't move down in the standings? So I don't know that you could do this in a normal season, but it's at least worth kicking around if they're really – I mean, clearly the NBA is very concerned about tanking in general, because they wouldn't have passed lottery reform without it. They wouldn't have, you know, they've done a number of things to prevent teams from doing this, at least late in the season. So I don't know, it's an interesting idea. Anthony, any final thoughts about the new format, the Grizzlies' chances, anything along those lines?
You mean as far as the draft format or just the playoff format?
Either or.
Well, as far as the draft format is concerned, you know, the Grizzlies, we owe a draft pick to Boston, so.
Oh, right.
Just ready to get rid of it. Just ready to get that out of the way so the Grizzlies can move on in their area. Well, like I said, the Grizzlies are a playoff team, so we don't care anything about this draft stuff, to be honest with you.
Yeah, That is fair. That's a good point about the pick, because I mean this is definitely the class to get rid of it if you're going to. I mean, a mid first round pick in this draft class.
Yeah, this draft is bad.
Yeah, you're not gonna lose sleep over losing that pick. Okay, so now that we've hit the NBA, we got to discuss everything else that's been going on around the country this week, because again, like it feels weird and trivial to be talking about the NBA at a time like this. And obviously, all of this started last Monday when George Floyd, who was a 46-year-old black man, got arrested or accosted by a police officer for he was accused of using a counterfeit $20 bill. The officer pinned him down and held his knee on his neck for almost 9 minutes, and killed him. He has since been charged with second-degree murder. The three cops who were with him have all been charged as accomplices to murder. And naturally, I mean, when that video came out, the outrage was palpable around the country immediately. And we've seen for the last week, I mean, every single state, there are people protesting every single day. It just felt like this was kind of a breaking point in terms of, police brutality and racial injustice and everything. And then, if you just go on Twitter, there are people compiling threads now of more examples of police brutality at these protests, which is just wild. I mean, the video that came out last night of the guy in Buffalo who was just walking and a cop shoved him and then he fell and hit his head on the ground, starts bleeding from the ear. Anthony, I mean, what was your reaction when that video first came out, and just like, how has the last week and a half been for you?
Ton of reactions, ton of emotions, too many to even really go into on this podcast. As a black man in America, and also as a parent of a black son, it's just pushing a very uncomfortable situation. Some of the things you have to explain to your child. My son loves police officers. He wants to be a police officer, talks about police officers all the time. He's also in the superhero lore. So when he talks about superheroes, he looks at police officers in that same light. He looks at them as, superheroes or whatever. And having to explain these things to him and to hear him say things when we're in the car, like, "Dad, go the other way. Don't go by those police officers," based off stuff that he's seeing on YouTube or seeing on television or just hearing people talking about. He has this new fear or uncertainty about officers that I have to explain to him about. And that's an unfortunate and a difficult conversation to have. And I hear people say things like, it's a bad time to talk about sports right now with everything that's going on. Like, I heard you guys saying that. And I get it, understand it. But I also kind of smirked and kind of laughed at it a little bit, because this isn't anything new. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And if that's the case, that this is a bad time to talk about sports, that means that it probably never has and probably never will be a good time to talk about sports, because these events, it's not just a police brutality thing. It's an issue with our country as far as how African-Americans are viewed and have been mistreated forever. And this isn't something that happened in 2020. It didn't happen 4 years ago in 2016. It's been going on for a long time, man. You know what I mean? So I mean, you're talking about a long, long time. I'm probably the oldest person on the phone. And it was going on way before I was alive. And just to show you how messed up America is, I'm not sure you guys know what sharecropping is. But sharecropping is basically, after slavery, African Americans didn't have anywhere to go. Like, once they were free, but they didn't own anything. So a lot of them would still work on slave land and live on slave land for free. So basically it was still slavery. And this process lasted a long time. And just to kind of show you how behind America is. Now I'll preface this by saying my parents had me when they were 40 years old. So I kind of skipped the generation. My parents were the age that my grandparents should have been. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But just keep this in mind. My parents were sharecroppers.
Wow.
So just let that sink in for a minute. This is the United States of America, and my parents were sharecroppers for slavery. If we think of slavery being something that happened just generations and generations ago. Like I said, I skipped a generation because my parents had me late in age. But just let that sink in. My parents were sharecroppers in America. And that's that's why I smirk and I laugh at some of the things people say, is like this is something new that that has an end date that's probably coming soon, because I don't think it's coming soon. You know what I mean? Just let those type of things sink in as far as how messed up America is.
Yeah, I mean, that's all a very fair point. I'm wondering, you know, in terms of, because I work at Bleacher Report full time, so a lot of the conversation this week has been around Drew Brees, which we can get to in a minute. But in terms, let's hit the NBA first, because the NBA, I think, in terms of any of the major sports leagues in recent years, has been the best about allowing players to express their views. We've seen, I mean, Jaylen Brown, Malcolm Brogdon, Trae Young, Tobias Harris. I'm sure I've missed. I know the Pistons participated in one yesterday, but all these guys have participated in protests in recent days. Tobias Harris wrote a great piece on the Players Tribune on Wednesday about everything that's going on. LeBron James has been outspoken in recent days. What do you think about how the NBA has been reacting to all this?
They handled everything well, and whether it's just for PR's sake or it's genuine from their hearts, they handle the simple things, the easy things, better than anyone else. I'm fresh off of literally laughing my butt off at a report from the NFL where they were going to incentivize teams that interview black candidates for jobs. And it just shows you just how upside down the NFL is and how far they have to go as far as relations go. Now, are there numbers that don't make sense in the NBA as far as the ratio between, you know, African-American players and every other race on the court, as opposed to general managers and coaches, things like that? Those things still do need to be addressed. But the NBA is just so far ahead of everyone else as far as saying the right things, doing the right things, and getting just the simple stuff, just getting PR things right, things that go out to the public. And you hear things like what Drew Brees said, the issue with former University of Memphis coach, by the way, Mike Norvell with Florida State. It's like, how do you, in the climate we're in now, how do you say and do the things that you say, in the position that you're in? But I just kind of write off as ignorance, man. Like when you look at things like Drew Brees said, like people say and do things based on their own experiences and based on lens that they see things through, and they don't always infuriate me. It just kind of shows you, okay, that's that guy's truth. That's real to him. So it doesn't really just bother me too much. I just kind of understand that's where it's coming from.
Yeah. I mean, the Drew Brees thing, what he did in an interview, for those if you have just been not paying attention to sports in recent days, which good for you. He did an interview with Yahoo Finance, and they asked him, you know, because Colin Kaepernick, of course, a couple of years ago, was the first prominent athlete to start kneeling during the national anthem. And he was kneeling for, he was saying, I can't support a country that has such racial injustice and so much police brutality toward underserved communities. The Yahoo Finance guy asked Drew Brees, like, what would you do? Like, what's your reaction if someone does what Kaepernick does this season? And he said, no, my grandfather's just in the military. I don't I can't stand for anyone who disrespects the flag, basically. And he got immediate backlash from not only players in the NFL, but LeBron James is one of them as well. But, you know, some of his teammates like Michael Thomas, Alvin Kamara, Malcolm Jenkins, all, you know, just really came out strongly against him. Anthony, I'm not sure if you saw it inside the NBA last night, but they talked about the Brees thing in particular. And I thought it was interesting because Charles Barkley, all of them like condemned what Drew Brees said. But then Charles Barkley was basically like, the reaction to his Drew Brees' comments were overblown. Whereas Kenny Smith was just like, nope, F that guy. Like that, as you said, it's just ignorance. What did you think about the whole Brees thing in general, like both his comments and the reaction?
I didn't see NBA inside last night, but as far as his comments, anyone who has any sense and is actually paying attention to anything, any type of awareness, whether it be self-awareness or just awareness in general, would realize that the issue is not about an American flag. It's definitely not towards our military. I definitely support anyone who protects me while I'm asleep. And anyone who participates in those type of protests it's against the nation and just the laws, the bylaws, the systematic racism, the things that have been allowed in this country forever. And Drew Brees should know that. I mean, and anyone who speaks those type of words should know better than to think that Kaepernick's issue is with the American flag or with the military. I think trying to associate those two things are just, you know, pretty ridiculous things to say. And as far as the national anthem is concerned, whenever someone has that conversation with me, I always challenge them to go look up the lyrics to the national anthem and go look up the third verse that they don't sing anymore. So
yeah.
So if anyone wants to go there, we can have that conversation either.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Kaepernick wasn't, he was not quiet or like being coy about what he was protesting. I mean, he came out and said, like, I am not protesting the military. I am protesting against racial injustice that has been in this country for, you know, a long time. So it's just Breeze like almost confusing the issue and conflating the two, which just
at the wrong time.
Yeah, yeah, right. Like the absolute worst time to do it. Mm-hmm. But I wonder, is there some, I don't even say like value necessarily, but like, is it almost good to have these very public educational moments at a time like this, where a guy like Drew Brees, who is beloved in the New Orleans community and like, you know, has the reputation of being a real good guy, like super charitable, does a lot of good for the community. Is it good to see someone like that make a mistake like this? Can it be like a larger teaching moment for the country in general?
Yeah, I think a lot of people are learning. Our country has been, I hate to use the word sensitive, but the country has been more aware of things that offend other people. I think that's mm-hmm. a better way to put it. Over the last few years, there's been a movement of things where people are being very vocal about things that are offensive or could upset or damage other people. And I think it's good to finally see racism included in that. Mm-hmm. hate to make a joke out of that, but there's been so many things that have been included in this list of things that, you know, you can't say, you can't touch. And I think in this latest movement that people are really, a lot of things that people are saying, there's a lot of backlash for it. Because if someone had made the comment about the flag or with Kaepernick as far as the military or whatever concerned, that would have been, no one would have cared. It would have been pretty much supported by a lot of people. But since people have been more aware of other people's feelings and their history and being more socially aware of each other, those type of things are brought out to the front. And it's like you said, it is a good teaching moment, so to speak.
Yeah, for sure. And I don't want to like put you on the spot here and make it seem like you have to have all the answers here, because of mm-hmm. course that's unfair to anyone. But in general, like, you know, we're all NBA fans, and the NBA is an overwhelmingly black league. So I think that, you know, it's our responsibility, regardless of your race, whoever's listening right now, we all have to be in support of this movement, because it not only does it affect the players, the coaches, everyone involved in the actual league, but like, this is a very diverse fan base that we have as well. So, you know, for Anthony, like, for all, I'm a white guy in Nashville, you know, for all of our white listeners as well, like, what can we do? Like, how can we be allies right now?
Well, first of all, I didn't know that you were in Nashville. I probably wouldn't have agreed to come on with you. First thing
you do, I'm moving in a couple weeks. Is that better?
Yeah, first thing you got to do is move out of Nashville.
I am. I'm moving to Baltimore soon.
That's better. I have family out in that area. So, yeah. But now, all jokes aside, though, man, you're saying basically what can white people do to say that again? I was setting up for my joke. And I
yeah. Just like, I mean, not even necessarily white people. Just like, how can anyone right now be an ally to the black community in this fight?
I think that in order for something like that to happen, I had someone else ask me a similar question off the off air or whatever, so to speak. I think that in order for change to really happen, we have to address issues and ignorance within our own cultures first. First, you have to start with yourself. You have to take a look at yourself introspectively, but you also have to deal with generational issues that, you know, maybe your dad has ways about him that you need to address dad on, or your neighbors or your fraternity brothers or your friends or cousins. I think that your neighbors, your coworkers, you have to address those things internally. And then once that happens, we can then come together and see where we are after those things have been addressed. Because I think that the state of the country, because there's so many people who, as far as racism is concerned, they do racist things, or they're ignorant in certain areas, but they don't realize that what they're doing is offensive. I heard someone on Memphis radio saying that yesterday, and he said, I'm sure I do things to black people that may rub them the right way. And he's a guy that I consider a friend, and I start laughing. I was like, yeah, you do it all the damn time. Like, you know what I mean? He doesn't mean harm. He's not a racist guy, but he just doesn't know, and he's just not aware of how certain things may come off. And I think we just need to take more time to just learn each other as a people, man. And address issues and call people out, and not stay in circles of people who refuse to change. I've seen a lot of my non African American friends, whether it be on Twitter or Facebook or whatever, where they've had moments where they've had to realize, hey, I've got issues within me I need to address, whether it just be not knowing and now I need to know, or people that are in my circle who don't think the right way that I've had to cut off. Those type of things is what makes healing happen.
Yeah. No, that's a really good point. You know, I'm thinking back, like I used to live in Chicago before I moved to Nashville. And, you know, during those years, I would always say it's like the most, not like overtly racist. It's not like the South, but it's just like so subtly. I mean, it's such a segregated city still. And it's not overt, but it's there still. And yeah, I mean, it's a really good point that it, like, this needs to start so locally, like with yourself, with your own community. And if everyone, you know, takes that responsibility, then we can start seeing the tendrils of change spread out. Mort, I've been hogging the conversation here. If you have any questions for Anthony here, fire away, man.
Well, first and foremost, I actually want to tell you a story real quick. I don't remember if I've ever told this on this podcast. I actually might have. But it's something that sticks out in my mind. In 2013, I was in Florida with my family, and we went to a Nike outlet store. And I was the guy there who serviced me was an African American, a young African American man, and we just started chatting. Like, we were talking, you know, Air Jordans, like we were laughing and all that, and you know. And I bought a bunch of stuff because it was cheap and it was like, hey, Jordans, man. Like, come on, obviously. And we chatted up for about like an hour, maybe an hour and a half or something. And then when I left the store, like I reached out and like I wanted to shake his hand. And he shook my hand and I noticed like his demeanor changing as well. And I was like, I didn't ask him about anything, but then he's just I didn't really know what to do. And then he just told me straight up, you know, man, it's been a while since I've been treated as an equal by a white person. I didn't know what to say, man. I was like, this is something that sticks out. Mm-hmm. I didn't do anything. You know what I mean? I was just, I'm sitting back and I'm thinking about it. I didn't deserve that praise. I was just talking to a person under very normal circumstances. And like, it just boggles my mind. Sorry. I mean, I'm very frustrated. It just boggles my mind why you know, we've reached that point where even the most simple of courtesies are now looked at as some sort of going out of your way to do something nice towards black people. Like, no, it's man, we just gotta treat each other like rationally and logically like normal fucking people. And I still that memory has popped up a lot over the past couple of weeks. And I have a hard time comprehending like all the layers to it. And then when I see the stuff that goes on, like when I'm on TV or on Twitter, and I don't comprehend it. And I think, you know, Anthony, the first thing that comes to mind to me is like, you know, you told us right before that, you know, this happens all the time. You're basically, you know, used to it or numb to it. I just don't understand. I'm so impressed by how the African American community can like keeping it somewhat like at bay and not affect you to the same extent that one might think, because obviously it affects you, but the fact that you can not lose your shit, to tell me to say it out straight, the fact that you can act rationally, I would be so upset all the time. I would have this mental breakdown, because I'm not as strong. I'm just very impressed with the strength that you guys always display publicly, privately. I'm in awe, man.
But yeah, well that's why when you see things like you hear kind of stereotypes about like the angry black man and things like that, kind of where those things come from, bro. I mean, it's we have a lot of frustration that we have to hold in, and we're not always the best at holding it in. So, but yeah, no, those are real situations. Like I tell people all the time too, I do deliveries for DoorDash part-time sometimes. And I've had some interesting experiences, man. You know what I mean? I actually own one of the DoorDash shirts that has the red shirt with DoorDash on it. And I had people ask me, well, other drivers that may see me out, say, well, why do you wear the shirt? You don't have to wear DoorDash stuff. You can wear regular clothes. I said, man, I'm a 6'3" black man with a beard. And in some of the neighborhoods I go in, I like to let people know who I am and why I'm there. So, because you'd be surprised, because I've had some of the most dangerous feeling situations going on in rich white neighborhoods, as opposed to actual literal housing projects I've had to make deliveries in. I felt comfortable there, but when I'm in rich white neighborhoods, I don't feel too safe at all. I've had some encounters. I had an older white man and his wife basically do a citizen's arrest on me almost for making a delivery in their neighborhood. they were asking me how I got into the gate. And because they said that they accused me of tailgating them in. I said, no, ma'am. I called the person I was delivering to, and they buzzed me in. I didn't tailgate you guys. I was in front of them, so I'm trying to figure out how I was able to tailgate them. They said that
oh, my God.
Yeah, they said something about their remote control let me in. And I'm like, no, your remote control didn't let me in. The customer that ordered this food let me in. And, you know, those type of things happen, man. They happen all the time. And even as a media member, I'm a credentialed media member that's covered the Grizzlies for a number of years. So many issues at security. I mean, there's been times where I've came in and been stopped by security. And like, you know, and I'm not even going to get into the depths of that. But yeah, man, like, it's real.
It's just like, I know this is a thing that, you know, you could ask any black person this, and I'm sure they have a similar story, but it's infuriating to hear it. And like, we all need to do better, basically. I mean, that's the bottom line, is like, no one should have that story based on the color of your skin. Like, you know, if you're doing something sketchy, like you're breaking windows, we're talking about all the people looting and all that shit, like, yeah, okay, fine. That's something you shouldn't be doing. But if you're just being identified based on, you know, like a black man in a white neighborhood, like that's not suspicious. It's just, it's. And I know these are uncomfortable conversations for a lot of people to be having, but at the same time, you know, and as you said, like this is not a new issue for the black community. So if like white people right now feel like uncomfortable and, you know, like are struggling to have these conversations,
right,
just imagine how the black community has felt forever. Like, right. we could be inconvenienced. It's really okay. Like, it's, if it means we have lasting change in this country, we all should be willing to make that sacrifice right now.
Right. And just an education moment, like you guys said, you wanted to learn how to do better, do your part. I'm not speaking for all black people, because all black people don't agree with me. But let's say, I'm just going to give you a teaching moment on this. Let's say that you're in a situation where you're watching someone abuse a dog. It's when someone's constantly beating up a dog every day. If the dog got up and started barking at this owner that was beating on him, you wouldn't have a problem with him, right?
Mm-hmm.
And right. If that dog also turned around and bit that owner, you wouldn't have a problem with it either, right?
No. Right. Yeah.
All right. The point I'm trying to make is, no matter what type of protest it is, there is something that causes them to have that reaction. So yeah. I hear a lot of corner making this. A lot of people say, well, I'm fine with the peaceful protest, but why are they being violent? Being violent won't bring, you know, George Floyd back, or robbing that Target, looting that Target won't bring George Floyd back. I'm not in a position to judge people's reactions to things. Do I think the looting is pretty dumb? Yes. But like I said, there's a lot of systematic things in place that lead to people's ultimate reactions. You know what I mean? There's a big gap between education levels, poverty levels, job levels, resources, all these type of things that have been here for generations on top of generations. So any type of protest, I don't think a protest has to be peaceful to be quote unquote right. Like I said, if you beat a dog now, if he barks so he bites, I'm down with either one of them.
I agree. I have not understood a single word of all criticisms of everything needs to be peaceful. Like, hell no. Like, white people and the police have not been peaceful. Right. You are allowed. Of course, you're allowed to react in the same manner. Right. It doesn't compute for me how at some level you are being asked to hold some sort of higher standard, whereas the cops, who are viewed as being, you know, quote unquote superior in the eyes of many white people, they're allowed to, you know, step down and do certain things that they really shouldn't be doing. It's all completely insane to me. I'm looking at the reactions and I'm just going, go for it. Like, and people are like, oh no, but what about Target?
Yeah.
Man, I don't give a fuck. I don't give a shit about Target. Right. They'll be fine.
Yeah.
Right. This nation wasn't founded on peace, gentlemen. I know that you probably thought it was, but it was founded on a lot of looting, a lot of rioting, a lot of war, a lot of murders. That this country was all founded on those type of things.
You know what really bugs me though? It's that when you turn on the TV, you see white millionaires who complain about the looting, not realizing, Anthony, like you just alluded to before, you know, with the lack of resources and the lesser pay and all that, like they can't put themselves in your shoes at any point, and they sit there and point their finger and like spread this vile information to millions and millions of people. Right. And at the end of the day, to me, it comes down to one thing is education. I think you hit that right on the head right there. Education is first and foremost. Then you need to vote for the right people. That means people out there, stop voting for, you know, 70 plus year old white men who, you know, are millionaires and have no idea of how to relate to any sort of minority. Right. I mean, not just the African American community, but everyone. Like, it's
anyone.
Yeah.
And that's not just minorities as far as race, minorities as far as class. I think classism is probably a huge issue in America that we sleep on a lot. It's not just a black and white thing. It's a rich versus poor thing as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not just presidential elections to stress this as well more. This is, I mean, local state elections, like your local principality is the one who have these police contract or the contracts with police unions. If you want to see local change, if you want to see police departments, you know, lose some of their funding or have to like disband entirely or have different tactics that they have to use, these are all elections matter. And, you know, hopefully we learned that lesson in 2016. We'll find out in a couple months, but like we need to take our civic duty responsibility and actually take advantage of it, because, you know, like all of these things in conjunction with one another. I don't think if you just have protests, anything will change. If you just have voting, everything will change. It's got to be all of these things together, and then we can have lasting systemic change.
Yep. Oh, my. I mean, well, you know, this is such a difficult conversation, but I'm so glad that we're having it.
Oh, yeah.
I'm so glad we're having it, because this is necessary. And I realized that, you know, Brian and I – you may not know this, Anthony, but Brian and I, when we started this podcast, we actually quite frequently went into political stuff, and you know, we took a pretty big hit listeners wise over the first couple of years because of it, and then we actually started refraining a little bit unintentionally, actually, and then we started talking about it, and it was like, hey, you know what, fuck that. Because we need to call out stuff that we're actually seeing, and we need to do something here, and this is part of it. So whatever we can do, at least on this platform as well, to educate, I mean, fuck, I mean, that's the least we could do.
Man, we gotta do this more often, man. We gotta link up again. We gotta get you out of Nashville, though, Brian.
Does it make it feel better if I like Memphis a lot more than Nashville? Is that?
Well, that's good, man. That's good.
My college roommate was from Memphis, so I heard long before I moved to Nashville, I heard how great Memphis was, and we've been there a couple times.
I gotta get you to Memphis so you can get some actual real chicken and real barbecue.
I know. Oh, I've been there. I've been to Gus's. I know what's up.
I was waiting for you to say that, but I gotta take you to a place called Uncle Lou's, man. A place called the Wing Guru. That's where I gotta take you to, bro.
Okay.
Eating that tourist food, man. We don't eat that down here.
That's true. I know. I'm loading up because we're moving in 2 weeks. So I'm loading up all the hot chicken barbecue I can right now.
All right,
bro. Well, Anthony, again, thank you, man, for coming on to discuss this. I know it's been a rough time of late, but as Mort said, I think this is an extremely valuable conversation for us to have, and it's one that we need to continue having. These issues, as you said, they're not going to go away overnight, and we're going to continue challenging ourselves to be better, and to elevate the Black voices as much as we possibly can, because I think even in the NBA media, which again is a predominantly Black sport, I think every major publication, we saw The Ringer catch some heat. Sports Illustrated, I know there's a thing that came out where they said they don't have a single full-time Black NFL or NBA writer. Like, it's on all of us to elevate your voices as much as possible here, because you have valuable input. Thank you again, man. I hope you...
Oh, yeah, brother. We got to get
involved. And one more time, please let our listeners know where they can find you on Twitter and where they can find your work.
All right, you can follow me on at Saint Asylum, SAINASYLUM, Saint Asylum. Also at All Grizzlies on Twitter. And you can catch my work on allgrizzlies.com. It's a Sports Illustrated channel.
Good stuff. Yeah, please follow Anthony. You can find him talking all sorts of trash in August when the Grizzlies upset the Los Angeles Lakers in round one. Exactly.
If that happens, man, you're gonna see me talk trash like none other.
I'm keeping my fingers crossed. That'd be awesome. And thank you all for listening today. As always, hope you're staying safe out there. Please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. Are being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen and our special guest, Anthony Sain. Have a good one, guys.
You too, Brian. I can't wait for all the sacks that Drew Brees is going to be hit with next season.